cigarette break. It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife. It's meeting the man of my dreams and then meeting his beautiful wife. And isn't it ironic? Don't you think? A little too ironic. And yeah, I really do think.
This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
For single-income people, there can be real challenges in buying a house. One reason is the difficulty in qualifying for a mortgage. But there are ways to overcome the challenges, especially if you have a decent credit score.
It can be easier for a couple, but it can be not as challenging for a single person if you kind of look out there and see what the possibilities are.
Then, a majority of nonprofits in America are facing greater demand, while volunteers and donations are declining. What are the reasons?
They're just a variety of changes. But yes, the percentage of people volunteering and giving to formal organizations, charities, has gone down.
Those two stories and more are coming your way on this week's InfoTrack. The show begins right after this.
It's the perfect time to get a jump on fall style at Macy's Ultimate Shopping Event, where you'll find incredible savings on the wardrobe update you need. Shop great looks you can wear now and later with an extra 25% off designer brands that rarely go on sale and 15% off your favorite makeup, fragrance, skincare, and more. Get ready for your best fall yet today at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Duration products and Superdeck stains from August 23rd through the 26th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Freedom on the open road. Sharp reflexes and smart decision-making is all that separates your body from the road. Even just one drink can affect your ability to ride. Alcohol limits your reaction time and decreases inhibitions, which is the perfect recipe for a DUI. So why would you ever risk riding while impaired? Ride sober or get pulled over. If you hit the bottle, don't roll the throttle. This message brought to you by NHTSA.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
You're a single person and you want to buy a home. What are the unique challenges you face? Here to share her expertise with us is Linda Bell, a senior writer on Bankrate's home lending team. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How does having a single income impact the ability to save for a down payment compared to a dual income household?
Well, as the saying goes, sometimes two is better than one, right? So you have two people that are saving, putting that money together for that down payment, and it can be easier for a couple. but it can be not as challenging for a single person if you kind of look out there and see what the possibilities are. Meaning, it could be teaming up with a family member or friends to kind of help you get that down payment, looking into loan options like FHA or VA loans, which have low or no down payment options. I mean, there are options for single people out there when it relates to the down payment.
There's something called the debt-to-income ratio. Can you elaborate on what that is and why it's important for single buyers to understand?
Well, it's so important because it's your debt levels in comparison to your income levels. And it's a computation that lenders put together to decide, should I lend this person money? Are they reliable to pay back this new debt they're taking on with this mortgage along with their other debts? And so, you know, lenders put together that computation and decide if they will approve you for the mortgage. So that's very important. That, along with credit score, is extremely important when lenders look at your ability to pay back the loan.
And how could a single buyer manage their debt to make them more attractive to a loan officer?
It's just a simple computation. So make sure that you're not just paying the minimum payments on certain debts that you have out there. Make sure that you're paying them on time. And then make sure that you don't have a lot of debt. Debt can be a good thing, but if lenders look at you and say, hey, this person really has a lot of debt, and they kind of balance the debt that you have with this new debt that you're taking on, and really it just boils down to them, they want to make sure that you're going to pay back this loan. Because if you're taking out a mortgage, it may be hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the lenders are kind of unsure and think that it's a risky proposition for you to be able to repay. So they want to make sure, absolutely. And that's where the debt-to-income ratio comes into play.
Regarding a credit score, what would be the least credit score to have to still get a really good mortgage rate?
That's an interesting question because it does vary by lenders. Now, some lenders tout and advertise, hey, we accept borrowers with credit scores as low as, you know, 680. But the reality is when you look at the data from the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, that shows that lenders usually approve borrowers who have a credit score in like the 760 range. Now, that could be very upsetting for a lot of borrowers because when you think about the fact that the average American has about a 717 credit score, so you really need to have your credit score up there. And while they advertise these lower credit score requirements, the reality is you may have higher rates that come with that, higher terms, and things that may not be favorable to actually be able to afford the home.
What about an arrangement where a single buyer might make a deal with a friend or relative and purchase a home together? Is that something you advise, and is that a good way to go?
If you do that, you just have to understand the pros and cons. The pro is that you'll be able to get that home with the help of your friend or your family member and what have you. But then you have to say, okay, this is an agreement. This is a money agreement. Like, who's going to be paying this mortgage? Who's going to deal with problems with the home? Are both people going to live in the home, or is it just going to be one person that's living in the home? Is this arrangement just with money, or, you know? So it's a deep discussion that needs to happen. And it really depends person by person. So once you have that discussion and decide if this is right for you, weigh the pros and cons. I would advise that going forward.
Our guest is Linda Bell, a senior writer on Bankrate's home lending team. And we're talking about how single people can buy a home. You talked about this co-buying agreement. Do you advise bringing in a lawyer to help you work on that?
Yes, definitely. I would say as much help as you can get with that whole process, because even though somebody is your friend and family, the worst thing that can happen to a relationship, I'm even talking outside of the monetary situation that we're discussing now, is if the parameters are not clear. So if we get into this agreement together, but nobody's talked about who's paying the mortgage, who's paying the extra property taxes when, you know, your taxes get raised in the coming year, or what if this happens, what if that happens? So a lawyer can help level the playing ground, so to speak, and lay everything out and keep everything on the straight and narrow. So yes, I would advise a lawyer to get involved in the whole process as well.
We talked earlier about the importance of your credit score, and sometimes you see advertised companies that will fix your credit score or help you, you know, improve it. Is there any value there, or is that something you should avoid?
Yes, some of them come with gotcha fees, so to speak. So no, I think it depends on everyone's personal situation. But sometimes I've seen that some companies advertise to help you fix your credit for a certain amount of money, but then there's some extra fees that are added along to it. So if you're struggling to pay back your bills, these added bills can just bring you more bills, and then you're in a worse situation than you were before. So I would say definitely do your research and due diligence before you kind of jump into that whole process.
For someone who's listening who is single and is very interested in starting their home buying journey, what advice would you give to get them started?
The first thing is to know how much you can afford and then understand the market that we're in right now. So when you take those two pieces, okay, let me see how much I can afford. Let's say I can afford a $400,000 house. The worst thing you can do, depending on the market that you're in, but speaking generally, is to say, okay, let me start searching for a $400,000 house. That's the worst thing you can do, because if we're in a situation now where inventory is tight in many parts of the country, if you find a house that's $400,000, you're already setting yourself up for failure, right? Because you see the house, you say, oh my goodness, this is the perfect house, let me bid on it. And then you get caught up in a bidding war situation, and then all of a sudden, you may get the house, but then you paid $50,000 over, let's say, just to get the house because you got caught up in that bidding war situation. So first understand how much you can afford, get your credit score in order, your credit profile, because that is the primary thing lenders will be looking at to decide whether to approve you. And you can do that by making sure your debt levels are intact, by making sure you're paying your bills on time. And then lastly, I would say you need to make sure that you shop at least three lenders, because what one lender offers, the other lender might not offer. One may look negatively at your credit score, that's right at the cusp. The other one may, you know, let you go through and approve your mortgage. So I would say those are three things to make sure you get in order.
Have you found that people who are renting and they really want to buy a home and they look into it and say, oh, it's just not going to happen, and they continue renting? Is that the case for many Americans right now?
Yes, it's almost like some people say it's the lesser of two evils. Rent prices, as you know, have been going higher and higher and higher. Interest rates are not what they were during the pandemic. They're not at the highs that they've been historically, but still a lot higher, making it harder for some people to be able to buy a home. So, you know, it can be challenging, but for some people in some markets, it's like the lesser of two evils. It's like, do I want to rent and pay these high rent prices that keep going up, or do I want to buy a home? So some people have decided, well, maybe I'll buy a smaller home, a starter home, and then get rates where they are now and maybe refinance down the road if rates move lower. So, you know, there could be a light at the end of the tunnel for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. Linda Bell, a senior writer on Bankrate's home lending team. Linda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Next, America's nonprofits are facing challenges. That story as InfoTrack continues.
You're listening to InfoTrack. More after this.
It's the perfect time to get a jump on fall style at Macy's Ultimate Shopping Event, where you'll find incredible savings on the wardrobe update you need. Shop great looks you can wear now and later with an extra 25% off designer brands that rarely go on sale, and 15% off your favorite makeup, fragrance, skincare, and more. Get ready for your best fall yet today at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Duration products and SuperDeck stains from August 23rd through the 26th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Joey, let's get some drive-thru.
Yeah, bro.
Food.
I'm going to have to ask you to step out of the car, sir.
Joey, let's get some drive-thru, man.
Let's order delivery instead.
If you feel different, you drive different, and driving high is a DUI. If you think no one can tell you're high, think again. Your friends, family, and especially law enforcement can see right through it. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high and get a DUI. Brought to you by NHTSA.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today? Brakes? We can save you 15% on that. We have OE quality Duralast brake pads and rotors in stock, ready for pickup or delivery. We also have calipers, brake fluid, tools, and anything else you'll need to do the job right. When you get Duralast pads and rotors together, you'll save 15%. It's just part of what makes us America's number one brakes destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Soup kitchens, homeless shelters, and other nonprofits are struggling to meet demand as the need for their services increases. Here with the story, InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Leslie Lenkowski, Professor Emeritus in Public Affairs and Philanthropic Studies at Indiana University, and an expert in volunteering and civic engagement. Professor, we understand volunteering has declined around 28% in the past decade. Why do you believe nonprofits are having trouble recruiting volunteers?
A variety of reasons. One reason is the population is different than it was, say, 25 years ago. We're less religious. Religious affiliation tends to increase volunteering. A larger percentage of the population is outside the labor force. Being in the labor force tends to increase population. We have smaller families. A lot of our volunteering and giving is done in connection with activities in which our children are involved. Not least important, the Great Recession between 2008 and 2010 had a very big effect. It really led to a sharp decline in the percentage of households that give. And I think beyond that, reminded everyone of how fragile our economy could be. And we've had another reminder of that in the last couple of years with skyrocketing rates of inflation. The bottom line is that people have less money to go around. Many people are working more than one job or longer hours, therefore have less time to volunteer. So there are just a variety of changes. But yes, the percentage of people volunteering and giving to formal organizations, charities, has gone down. However, it's also important to keep in mind that a much larger percentage of the population says they do things informally. They help neighbors. They participate in groups that aren't formally organized. And then, especially among younger people, we see different patterns of giving and volunteering, using the internet, for example, or perhaps being more interested in political activities than traditional charitable activities. But the picture is very complicated. The general trend is one we agree on. The share of Americans giving and volunteering has declined.
How do nonprofits then adjust to having fewer volunteers? Are they providing less service?
Well, some may be, but this is another part of the equation. Nonprofit organizations, over the last 30 to 40 years, have become more professionalized. The truth of the matter is the usefulness of volunteers in many nonprofit organizations is much smaller than it used to be. When I led the Corporation for National Community Service, the primary federal agency concerned with volunteering, I used to ask my audience in speeches, if you had an operation and you woke up in intensive care, would you prefer to be looking at what we used to call a candy striper, volunteer who's coming around with magazines and such like, or a registered nurse? Well, most people would say registered nurse. And indeed, a lot of our charities are now much more professionalized than they used to be.
But is there evidence that some or many nonprofits will have to shut their doors unless things change?
No. We don't think we're at a point where the decline in giving or volunteering is going to lead to shutdowns in nonprofit organizations. Very simple reason. Donations for the typical nonprofit organization in the United States are the third most important source of revenue, behind earned income, such as tuitions or tickets and so on, and government grants and contracts, such as Medicaid reimbursement, so on. On average, donations come to about 15 to 20% of the revenue of nonprofits. Obviously, some nonprofits, particularly smaller ones, religious ones, much more heavily dependent on nonprofits than others. They're the ones that are going to be most affected and really need to look carefully at what they're doing to attract caregivers and volunteers.
We're visiting with Leslie Lenkowski, an expert in volunteering and civic engagement, also professor emeritus in public affairs and philanthropic studies at Indiana University in Bloomington. I want you to drill down on what you said before about the role of declining religious participation. How does that play a role into declining volunteerism?
Well, our major faith traditions have always emphasized the importance of helping others. Judaism, Christianity, Islam, these are central beliefs for those religions. Yet we know that, at least since the beginning of this century, the percentage of Americans who report that they are members of one or another religious body or attend worship services regularly has been going down. By the same token, what one research organization called the rise of the nuns, people with no particular religious affiliation, has been increasing. So that commitment to help others has been going down among individuals. Also, with fewer members, churches or synagogues or mosques have fewer people they could use in volunteer programs.
Now, regarding giving again, how would you advise nonprofits to draw in more donations in this day and age?
I think they have to work harder, make sure that people in their communities understand what they are doing and why helping in gifts and volunteer time is important. We've also seen growing distrust of nonprofits. A variety of surveys have shown that just as people have become more mistrustful of government and business, they are now less trustful of nonprofit organizations too. The most important factor in increasing trust is familiarity. You have had personal experience, or you know somebody who's had personal experience with a nonprofit, and so you will be more trusting of that organization. A lot of workplace volunteering, for example, comes about when the person you're working with asks you to help out, say, on a charitable event, a walkathon or something like that, because your colleague has been active at a charity, might have had a child that benefited from it. So familiarity may breed contempt in many ways, but in the nonprofit world, it builds support.
And I know that some say organizations might want to focus less on individual donations and more on sort of planned giving as well.
Yeah, I don't think that's an either or. What we know, people who volunteer more are likely to give more. People who give regularly are more likely to make planned gifts. All these go together.
And do nonprofits need to do a better job of publicly recognizing donors for their generosity, sort of what you were talking about before, about just reestablishing that relationship very often?
Well, I think it's always good to say thank you as publicly as possible. But I think it's also important for nonprofits to do a much better job of explaining to potential donors and volunteers what they do, how they're using the gifts, why they're doing it, and why they need help.
Leslie Lenkowski, an expert in volunteering and civic engagement, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
It's the perfect time to get a jump on fall style at Macy's Ultimate Shopping Event, where you'll find incredible savings on the wardrobe update you need. Shop great looks you can wear now and later with an extra 25% off designer brands that rarely go on sale and 15% off your favorite makeup, fragrance, skincare, and more. Get ready for your best fall yet today at Macy's. Savings off regular and already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Getting behind the wheel after drinking could change your world. Bobby here had a great time at the party and thought he was good to drive home. Now, Bobby's facing jail time, an upset wife, disappointed parents, and up to a $10,000 fine. It only takes one bad decision to change your world forever. Getting behind the wheel after you've been drinking is one of them. Drive sober or get pulled over. Learn more at NHTSA.gov. That's NHTSA.gov. This message brought to you by NHTSA.
A good night's sleep is essential for children's health and development. But childhood sleep patterns may also be linked to some surprising risks that would never occur to parents. With this story, here's InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. Our guest is Anne Marie Chang, Associate Professor of Biobehavioral Health at Penn State University. Professor Chang, you were the senior author of a paper that examined the connection between less sleep and later bedtimes in childhood to future substance abuse as an adolescent. Can you explain the main findings of your study in simple terms?
Sure. What we did was looked at bedtimes and sleep duration in different ages in childhood with substance use and alcohol use later in adolescence, so when the child was in their teens.
And what did you find?
We found that when children had later bedtimes or shorter sleep duration at ages 5 and 9, they tended to experience greater use or risk of use of ever trying alcohol or using marijuana at age 15.
And when you say later bedtimes and shorter sleep durations, how do you define those?
What we did was assess what their bedtimes were on average at different ages in childhood, at age 5 and at age 9, also at age 15. And we also assessed what their average sleep duration was for the sample at those ages. And then we sought to test the association with those sleep patterns and use of alcohol or marijuana at age 15. And we found that later bedtime than average at those specific ages was associated in some cases with higher risk of using substances, as well as shorter sleep duration. And when I say shorter sleep duration, we found that sleeping shorter than average at that particular age for the sample by about an hour resulted in a higher odds ratio or higher risk of using substances.
Why do you think these later bedtimes and shorter sleep durations are linked to higher chances of substance abuse in adolescents?
Well, we know from other studies that later bedtime, particularly in school-age children, can result in shorter sleep duration and poorer sleep quality. And so those have been associated with adverse health effects. So this is something that we were expecting perhaps to see with regard to risky health behaviors like drinking alcohol or smoking marijuana as a teen.
What are some practical steps that parents can take to ensure their children get adequate sleep?
We generally want to have parents prioritize their child's sleep and their child's sleep behaviors. So things like setting bedtimes that are age appropriate and trying to make sure that the child is adhering to those bedtimes can help in establishing good routines and patterns for sleep, especially at ages where the child has perhaps an early start time for school the next day, and the bedtime is really where there can be modification to ensure that the child is sleeping an adequate amount.
And is there a benchmark that parents can use to know what the appropriate bedtime is per their child's age?
There are recommendations from the American Academy of Sleep Medicine that ensure that children at different ages are receiving the adequate amount of sleep that they need. Generally, children are recommended to achieve at least a minimum of 9 to 10 hours of sleep, depending on their age, per night.
Do you have any final words of advice for parents?
That sleep is a priority, and that they should be making sleep a priority, not only for themselves, but for their children, because we see that this may have effects on a child's health, not only their sleep health at a particular age, but also risk of other health behaviors or health problems later in life.
Anne-Marie Chang, Associate Professor of Biobehavioral Health at Penn State, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
And that's it for this week's show. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Whitting. We hope you'll join us right here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Mike McKay is back. Wake up with Mike McKay in the morning every weekday morning from 6 till 10 on CFW. Mike has your news and weather every hour and everything you need to know about the fun things happening throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley. Plus, Mike announces your birthday and anniversary shout-outs every morning at 8:15. Send them in through our Facebook or text us. It's easy to do with our free Civic Media app.
Listen in the morning and it'll keep you smiling all day.
Mike McKay in the morning on 105.7 CFW.
And more.
We're your place for fun music. 105.7 CFW.
Get to my time now.
is 105.7 CFW.
CFW.
Made it easy for you to listen to 105.7 CFW wherever you work. Download the free Civic Media app. Find CFW, then stream us anytime, anywhere.
With a little financial support from the Wisconsin Chairs Child Care Subsidy Program, more is possible. You can focus on work, continue your education, and take advantage of opportunities that make your family stronger. Best of all, you can give your child a great start with the high-quality care they deserve. What's your more? Learn how you can get help paying for childcare by visiting wishares.wi.gov today.
CapTime's Idea Fest is back for a week of powerhouse speakers and sessions exploring important local and national topics. September 15th through the 21st in Madison. This year's guest speakers include Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, former Member of Congress Liz Cheney, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and historian Heather Cox Richardson, along with many others. Idea Fest brings together changemakers to discuss Wisconsin's triumphs and failures to help reach a better state. Purchase your tickets today at CapTimesIdeaFest.com to join this premier thought festival.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. I want to talk today to the folks who are trying to decide between funding their retirement or funding their kids' future education. because for a lot of us, this is an either-or choice. And I'm here to tell you, or just to give you permission, to fund your retirement before a 529 or another school-specific savings plan. Why? Well, your kids can borrow money for their education, and they might get scholarships or grants to help them pay for it. But there aren't loans to help you pay for retirement. And while Social Security will be there to support you, most of us want or need to live on a little more than what Social Security provides. And if you don't save for retirement, your kids could ultimately end up on the hook paying for your care. Taking care of you is also taking care of them. For more everyday money tips, check out Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
Are you and your family weather ready?
I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
Warm weather, humidity, and thunderstorms in Wisconsin bring mosquitoes that bite and annoy us throughout the spring and summer months.
They're there. They're always there. And then when we have high rainfall years, they're going to be more prevalent.
In fact, the first confirmed case of the West Nile virus has bitten Wisconsin. It was found in a blood donor from Washington County and also in a dead bird in Chippewa County. The West Nile virus is spread to humans, birds, and other animals through the bite of these infected mosquitoes.
Eliminate any water sources, dump those flower pots out, don't let dog or kitty pools sit, fill them when you're going to use them, and then dump them out. Clean the gutters, reduce those sources is definitely going to help. You want to still be able to enjoy your yard.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Universities of Wisconsin Board of Regents has agreed to ask Governor Tony Evers for over $850 million more in the next state budget. According to an Associated Press report, the UW system's current budget is just under $8 billion, and if approved, the increase would be a nearly 11% raise. Officials say the extra funding would allow the university system to give an 8% raise for faculty and staff, expand a tuition coverage program for low-income students, and keep two-year campuses open. The Menominee Police Department will be reminding college students about city ordinances ahead of the new school year. According to a WQOW report, law enforcement officials will be sharing flyers around the University of Wisconsin's Stout campus to make sure students know what could land them a fine. Some of the reminders on the flyer include things like a $500 fine for carrying a fake ID and a $150 fine for leaving an indoor couch outside on the lawn. The flyers will be distributed in September. And that's what you need to know. For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly.
Chippewa Valley weather.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. We'll have a partly sunny sky for your Sunday. High temperatures warming to the lower 90s. Our heat index, though, in the upper 90s. A light south to southeast wind. Tonight, partly cloudy skies and mid-70s. On Monday, mostly sunny and hot. Highs in the middle 90s. It's 69 at our studios.
CFW.
Sweet lights, people.
1057 CFW. Chippewa Valley weekends never sounded so good. 80s, 90s, and more all weekend long. 105.7 CFW. Your home for the 80s, 90s, and more. WCFW-FM and WCFW-HD1 Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire. Streaming live on the free Civic Media app. CFW.